Welcome to the fifth edition of Uncle Bobby's Country Corner, where real men don't play. Before I was a man, I was a child and a baby in the womb of the lady by the name of Georgia Lee Smith. This show is dedicated to my late mother, Georgia Lee Smith. May she rest in peace. She was something really special because I was a piece of work. And she fell in love with a guy named Robert Lee Glanton. They didn't get married. And we grew up in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. She wanted everybody to know that's Bob Boy. So that's how I ended up being Bobby Glanton Smith. All right, Mama, I'm going to kick this thing off. Hope I make you proud. Our first guest today. Well, before we do that, because I'm really amped up about this show. It's ladies' night. But this show is going to be possible to expand because of people like Lieutenant Colonel, retired U.S. Air Force, Frederick Woods, and his company, Emerge Solutions Group, out of Washington, D.C. You can check him out at emergesolutionsgroup.com. Also, Wendell Stimley, CEO, founder of Black IPO, a construction management and engineering firm, out of about five or six different cities. He was my very first guest on Uncle Bobby's Country Corner. Just Google Black IPO. Without any further ado, my first guest tonight, she and I go all the way back like the seats in a Broham Cadillac. I've known her as long as I've known anybody. And her mom, Miss Gracie Turner, we call her Mother Gracie, she sold into my life because she was one of my mother's very best friends. And when I was about 6 or 7 years old, we went out in Patterson Park, and she introduced me to the game of tennis. And it was a sissy sport back then. Didn't nobody want to play no tennis. And she said, Bobby, you can play this game. And she stayed on me about that, my grades and everything else, to the extent that in 1984, I came back to Murfreesboro on vacation, and they just happened to be playing the Murfreesboro City Open Tennis Tournament. And I won that tournament and gave her that trophy. So without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, her offspring, an incredible sister in her own right. She is presently the assistant to the president of Middle Tennessee State University. Please welcome Dr. Gloria Bonner. Gloria, how you doing today?
How are you? Good evening. Thank you for having me.
I had to have you on here because of where we're from. And it's ladies' night. And the reason I chose that song to start the show is because ladies are special people for a number of reasons. You've been married for, oh my goodness, how many years you've been married to Raymond Bonner now?
41 years. 41 amazing years.
You know that's right. And Raymond has been a dear friend since he came to Murfreesboro to attend Middle Tennessee State University on a football scholarship. And he became an integral part of the Middle Tennessee community. He's now a track coach down there, right?
Exactly. He's working with the legendary Dean Hayes, who's been there 50 years at MTSU.
Well, enough about Raymond and enough about me. Let's talk about Dr. Raymond Bonner and your amazing journey into the spot that you find yourself at right now. So if you would, please share a little of your professional history with my audience tonight.
Okay. I am currently the assistant to the president at Middle Tennessee State University. I have been there at the university for 32 years. So that means I've had the privilege of working with five university presidents from one institution alone. So I am celebrating now my 44th career year in academic and administrative experience.
So why did you go into education?
Well, you know, I have always had the opportunity to work with amazing teachers. And Bobby, as you know, we had great teachers at Bradley Elementary School as well as Holloway High School here in this community. But initially, when I enrolled at MTSU in the fall of 1968, I declared nursing as my major. And because of a lot of political issues during that time in the 60s and early 70s, I gravitated to the education profession because I felt a calling to influence the minds of young people in the public school system. And that gave me a greater audience in terms of who I could influence.
You know, during the span of your career, Middle Tennessee State University has went from a bedroom college. You know, a lot of the kids came primarily out of Nashville, and by the weekend, everybody went back to their respective hometowns, and the university practically shut down. And here we are in 2017, and the school has emerged as a cornerstone of just amazing growth, not only in Murfreesboro and Rutherford County, but in Middle Tennessee. Could you explain the evolution of the university and the role that you have played in the advancement of the college?
Well, I don't know that I can give myself credit.
Well, I do it for you if you refuse to.
but listen, we have had very strong leadership. And when I first arrived in 1985 as an instructor at the institution, and I can only give former instructors that I had during the 60s credit for this, they recruited me while my husband and I were in Atlanta. But when I had the opportunity to return to MTSU, I was mentored by amazing faculty and had strong support from the department chair at the time, who was Ralph White. But, you know, you have that threat of publish or perish, but they provided a great platform for me to be successful. And then, too, since I had experience as a teacher, I knew how to navigate that tenure piece. So that led to being able to advance through the ranks from instructor, which was at that time the lowest level, to assistant professor, associate professor, and then eventually full professor, as well as tenure.
So, what's the population at Middle Tennessee State now?
Right now, the population is about 23,600 students, and that's a tremendous growth compared to the years when you were there, and you're much younger than I am.
Get out of here.
Compare that to the years when I started in 1968. So we've experienced a lot of growth at MTSU.
Now, there's been a succession of black presidents at the university. What impact has that had on the aspirations of the student population that happens to be black and the success rate as opposed to before black presidents arrived at the campus?
Well, we've had primarily two presidents of color. Jim Walker came in 1990. And he's an alum of Alabama State. We recruited him by way of University of Colorado Greeley. Now, he had an amazing vision, and his motto was always, if you build it, they would come. So he set a course through an academic master plan to build bigger and better programs as well as great facilities. And also, he was very aggressive with the recruitment initiative because he strongly believed that every student should at least have the option to attend a university. Now, couple that with our present president, who is originally from the Bahamas, but is an alum of Prairie View University out of Texas. And he, too, had that vision and foresight to build upon the vision of Jim Walker. So his focus was not only on the growth that Jim Walker started, he also focused on expanding that vision that Jim Walker set the course for. So we've had two very amazing leaders that have taken the university to greater heights.
So what's the present president's name?
Sidney McPhee, President Sidney McPhee.
Now, as a female in a position of great influence, what has allowed you to feel good about utilizing all of the stepping stones and the mentors that you've had over your span of 41 years as an educator to impact the lives of the population that you deal with now?
Well, you know, I've had some wonderful role models in my life, and starting, Bobby, as you know, from home, my first teachers, my parents, Mama and Daddy Hamp.
That's
so
right.
they were not only an amazing influence in our lives, but they were always the kind of parents that reached out to other kids in the community. So it was a part of our lifestyle to embrace those members of the community. And therefore, that was ingrained in me. And I'm just continuing and blessed to be able to continue a legacy. But as you said, like your mom and all the mothers and dads in our neighborhood, they worked as a village. So we had no option but to be a part of that. And that's a part of a legacy that we'll always value, but we'll also want to continue that legacy by making sure that we're reaching out to the future generation as they come along.
So I understand you are retiring next month. What's on the horizon for Dr. Gloria Bonner?
Lots of exciting things. I haven't, as you know, I was dean in the College of Education and Behavioral Science at MTSU. That within itself is just extraordinary for me, because with that academic unit, I was responsible for the largest teacher ed program in the state, and honored and humbled to be able to do that. Now, I want to continue my post-retirement career. I'm just going to reset. I'm not going to retire. I'm going to reset and reinvent myself by working in the faith-based community. So I've been fortunate enough to work with the National Primitive Baptist Convention, Incorporated, which consists of 358 churches nationwide. So we've designed an articulation program where pastors and members of the lay community can earn 30 credit hours that's offered through Evangelical Training Association and transfer to Faith International University in Tacoma, Washington, or Huntsville Bible College, which is, of course, in Huntsville, Alabama.
Fantastic. As we wrap up this interview, I would be remiss not to publicly thank you. It's been about almost 10 years ago now when I decided to embed the AmeriCan program in Murfreesboro on a pilot program basis. And one of the first people I called was Dr. Gloria Bonner, and she was so helpful in allowing that process to unfold. And you're therefore a lifetime member of the AmeriCan family. And I want you to know, it ain't over yet. We got my next guest on the show has done a film documentary about the journey of the AmeriCan program. And I tell you, you know how I feel about Murfreesboro. And
oh, yeah.
we'll be back. We will be back, and this time we're going to stay in the mix and bring that message of self-determination to that community once again. Gloria, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule.
Say how very proud we are of you.
Oh, you just going to say that, huh? Well, you know what, Gloria? I had to bring you on because people all over the country and parts of the world know about Reed Alley, and I said I had to give them a taste of First Avenue today, you know.
Well, I'm happy to represent.
You sure did. Love you dearly, and don't be a stranger at Uncle Bobby's Country Corner, okay?
Okay. Congratulations, and thank you so much. For all right.
Appreciate you. We're going to take a short pause for the calls, and we'll be right back with a very special guest. All right. Welcome back to Uncle Bobby's Country Corner. We done got a good, I guess, cross-section of people coming up in here because it's ladies' night. And we've been joined to my immediate right by, y'all know I'm into nepotism. And it's going to be some family folks coming through here from time to time. Originally from my hometown of Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Moved to Nashville, attended Fish University. Met a woman he's been married to. Long enough for her to sit over there just still radiating after all of these years, Miss Kathy Leslie. Ladies and gentlemen, my co-host for this evening, my cousin, Victor Leslie. Welcome, Vic, to Uncle Bobby's Country Corner.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here. We did the L.A. thing tonight and hit traffic big time, but I wore pink for the ladies, so I'm ready.
Okay, y'all, here we go. To my immediate left, I've known this sister long enough to be glad to see her. It's been a minute since we've seen each other in person. And she's an integral part of the American family to the extent that for the last 10 years plus.
14 to be exact.
14 years. She's been sowing into a project that will bear fruit Friday night here in Los Angeles at the Pan-African Film Festival. Without any further ado, welcome Aurora Ferlin to Uncle Bobby's Country
Corner. Thank you, and thank you for having me. Really, really glad to be here.
Well, as you can tell, she got a hint of an accent. Where are you originally from, Ferlin?
I'm actually from Belgium. Yeah,
Belgium.
I grew up in Belgium. My dad is Rwandan.
Oh,
but my mom is Belgian, and I grew up in Belgium, and then eventually ended up here for school.
Wow.
And I stuck around.
And we're going to make this a real American family affair. We have on the phone calling all the way from Cleveland, Ohio. He's been a soldier on the front line for more than 30 years. Welcome to Uncle Bobby's Country Corner, Brother James Box. Are you with me?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm good, Bob.
I know you only have a minute, and that's why I wanted to get you in right now, because you got so much on your plate. It ain't even funny, but I wanted you to say hello to Sister Aurora and just chop it up with her for a minute, and then we're going to keep it moving on down the road.
Hey, Aurora, how you been?
Hey, Box, pretty good. It's been a minute since I've seen you as well.
Oh, yeah. We're still on the front line doing what we do.
Exactly. Yeah, I spent some time with Box, actually, in Cleveland when we were shooting the film. It's been like, what, like 6-7 years, Box?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, by the time you do part two, the stuff that he's working on right now,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be a whole nother frontier for you to work out of, you know, as a filmmaker. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah. I think one of the things that just working on this film, when you mentioned you brought up part two, there's so many different and incredible stories, like in every city. I mean, not just in L.A., but in Cleveland. And, you know, I think one of the hardest things about working on this film was to decide which stories to tell and which stories that I sort of had to cut, you know, because, you know, when you're dealing with a film, you want to engage the people and you want to tell it within a certain period of time and keep everyone engaged. So it's impossible to tell everyone's story. But yeah, like you said, there could be a part two, part three, part four. I mean, it just never ends,
yeah,
you know, because the work never ends, too. So,
that's true. Yeah. So, Box, I know that you broke away from some very serious American business just to say hello to the sister. And I want my audience to know that in the coming weeks, you're going to get to know Brother James Box very well. Because if there's anybody that has been with Jim practically since the beginning of American, maybe actually before then, because he grew up in Cleveland, he lives in Cleveland, and he's a straight frontline soldier for the American cause. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks, James, for calling in, man, and look forward to having you on future episodes of Uncle Bobby's Country Corner.
Absolutely.
All right. Back to you, Ms. Ferlin. What made you move in the direction of Jim Brown's movement? Because you've been involved a long time.
Well, it was a number of different things that sort of happened around the same time. I had actually just moved to L.A. I moved to L.A. in the end of 2003. And so I've been here like 14 years. And shortly thereafter, I met Ronnie Barron, who worked for American
Looney,
and who introduced me to the program. He invited me for a graduation. But right before I met him, actually, there was a wave of violence. And I remember this story of this young kid that had been killed in Compton. And I was so touched by it. And I was actually also touched by it that people sort of seemed desensitized to it, you know, sort of like not indifferent, but desensitized. Like it was news for a few days and then it was out of the news. How could that be that a six-year-old can die by a gunshot and it's no longer news after a week? I thought that was not right. So I knew I wanted to do something about it. I just moved to LA. I wanted to find something creative to work on. And it was around that time that I met Ronnie Barron. I went to graduation from American and I was completely taken by just the stories of transformation, you know, and by Jim, both Jim and Monique's work and their commitment to social change and to the movement, how they opened their homes and how they were both so committed to changing these lives that I just, I wanted to be a part of it, you know.
Is there a single, and I know that's a ridiculous question to ask, but it just sounds right, you know what I'm saying? Is there a single thing?
There's no ridiculous questions, only ridiculous answers,
but,
right?
Is there something in particular that once you were introduced you to the work that compelled you to take it to the extent that you have in terms of actually putting in the years and years of work to do this documentary?
Well, I'll tell you, Bobby, that when I first started, I didn't know it was going to be this journey of 12 years. I thought, well, I'm going to film for about a year. I'm going to put, you know, film together. It's easy. But then once I got into it, there's so many different layers to this story, you know, and not just the story of course, you know, gang violence and everything that happens on the streets. But as far as just Jim's life and his commitment, you know, that he has to the people. And so that it was impossible to just film 1 year and then, you know, call it quits. So I don't think I necessarily set out to film for 12 years. It was kind of like a journey that you know, just took me there. As far as one moment, there's several moments along the way that kind of reinforced my, I want to say, commitment or passion. You know, not one particular moment. I think that I always knew that this was sort of like a purpose project. Sometimes I talk about it with Monique, who's been a great help as well in this project. And we talk about how things don't happen just because they happen. Things happen for a reason. So I really believe that I was led to work on this project. So I knew I could never walk away from it until it was successfully completed. I have to tell you that when Ronnie passed away, for me, that was a moment.
Ronnie Barron.
Also known as Looney. I knew that I just had to get his story out there, you know. So, I mean, but there's a lot of different stories. I think when you're dealing in the community and you deal with the mothers and you deal with the guys and Jim and Monique who've made so many sacrifices, you know, for this movement and for this change, it's something that you just can't walk away from. Like it's I feel like I had a responsibility to tell this story and tell it right.
Well, you know, my cousin here, he's been by proxy American family since I came to California. What year did you come to California?
1973. I'm new on this scene here, but I'd like to ask you a question. First of all,
sure.
I'm a firm believer that we no longer have 6 degrees of separation. Mm-hmm. We're down to like 3 or 2.5. Mm-hmm. My son's father-in-law is from Belgium, and we just finished entertaining two of his relatives from Belgium.
Well, we might be related.
Over the Christmas. That's what I'm saying. And what is the name of your documentary?
Mm-hmm. The name is Jim Brown's American Dream.
Okay. And it's premiering Friday night?
It's premiering Friday night at 7 p.m. at the Pan African Film Festival.
Okay.
Wonderful timing for that question because it allows us to engage in this conversation, the First Lady of American. You must have heard your ears burning, Monique, because we've spent the last 3 minutes talking about you. Welcome, Monique Brown, the wife of the great Jim Brown, to Uncle Bobby's Country Corner. How you doing today, Monique?
Hey, I'm doing great. Hey, Bobby. Hey, Aurora.
Hey, Monique.
Fantastic.
How do you feel about the evolution of this project? I know that over the years you and Aurora have become more than just casual friends. You know, y'all have a very deep relationship.
Absolutely.
So could you speak to the journey of completing this particular project?
You know, it's really, when you say evolution, you hit it right on the nail. This project began as an interest that Aurora had based upon meeting a gentleman by the name of Looney, who was very dear to our hearts and to the organization. And it really, it's been an incredible journey of awareness and some pain. I mean, it's been ups and downs and trials and tribulations and triumphs and failures, and it's been life. Mm-hmm. And in that we've celebrated, we've cried, and I think Aurora fell in love with the organization and the movement.
Yes.
And has a real passion for community. So it's been an honor for me to not only call her a partner but a friend. One of my dearest friends, and it's made the process even greater to be working together on such a monumental, historic, and important, relevant piece.
It's Ladies' Night here at Uncle Bobby's Country Corner, and because both of you have sold in for so many years into the American movement, my question is, from a female vantage point, what's it like being a part of this work? And I'll pose that to Monique first.
Man, having been involved over 20 plus years now, it's been incredible. I've had an honor and the privilege of walking side by side with Jim, you know, obviously Jim Brown. I mean, my husband, my mentor, my friend, and the men and women, but primarily the men that have been around him, have become brothers, and we've side by side in communities, and yeah, it's been really interesting to watch their development and growth, and individuals gain custody of their children. I mean, I've lived it for 20 years. I've watched transformation occur on the deepest level. With the men in our communities, and not only for them, but for their families. And I've seen firsthand the ripple effect that one life can have when you change the mindset of men who are so influential in their communities, who become warriors for peace. So
oh, wow.
It's been an honor for me.
So same question to you. Being a female and then being immersed into a culture that's very male-dominated, you know,
mm-hmm.
What has been your reaction to that or your observations of it?
Yeah, well, I first want to say I really echo what Monique, or agree with what Monique said, or kind of feel the same way. It's sort of like, you know, I look at them like brothers, you know, and it's like becoming part of a family almost. Like I've been around for now, Monique has been around much longer and to a much deeper level than I have, but I've been around for like 14 years. I've traveled with the guys, I've been into the jails and the prisons, often where I was the only woman around. And I've always felt respected and even uplifted, you know, as a sister. And I think that's partly a testament to the strength of just the curriculum, you know, just the American family. But I also never really looked at it as like I'm coming into this as a woman. I felt like I'm coming into it as a human being trying to make a difference, you know. And I can't speak for Monique, but I think maybe she might feel the same way, is that we've always put we always had a purpose within the movement and a vision of what we were doing there. And I think just focusing on that, kind of the fact that I am a woman, sort of, you know, is kind of like secondary. So I never actually thought about it until you asked me the question.
Oh, wow. In the final moments of this very historic and special interview with two very special ladies, Monique, the film kind of encapsulates the last 14 years of the work. So let's look at what we're going to be experiencing from American as we move forward. What's on the horizon for American?
Man, it's been a dream come true. It's come full circle. And right now we've got the support of the community and corporate America and the administration in a way that has never been before. And you'll look for American to be an institution nationwide, working with hand-in-hand with many great organizations, working with members of the faith-based community, working with the contractors and the developers, looking at jobs, looking at job skills, and basically providing the life skills necessary to sustain those positions. So we're looking at a whole holistic approach to community development, and it's been a dream come true for us. And we thank you, Bobby, for all of your support, for all of your drive and initiative and creativity. You've been alongside us as our brother, and we thank you.
Well, you know, I appreciate that, Monique. It means a lot coming from you. I'm going to San Diego tomorrow for the midwinter conference of the National Association of Minority Contractors. And because of your support over the years, I've been able to begin to close that gap to the point where it becomes an integral part of the work that American does, because that curriculum fits so wonderfully with institution and a segment of the economy that helps us to address the greater problems that we deal with, and that is how to take guns out of people's hands and put work tools in them. Okay. So I will be getting with you tomorrow evening after I get back from, matter of fact, I will be calling you from San Diego to set up an interview with Jim and the principal contractors while they're in the city. And this is indeed an exciting time in the evolution of American. And thank you, Monique, for calling in. And Aurora, one final thing, and that is, I'm just trying to shape this because I've known you and I've watched you grow as a filmmaker. What does this mean to you to finally get to a point where the world will see your product?
Wow. I think it's, oh gosh, I can't even really put it into words. I think it's amazing because as a filmmaker, you sit with your work by yourself for so long. So to be able to finally share it, it's incredible. And we've actually premiered it, and Monique was there too. We premiered it in Cleveland, and we went to Miami. And the response we had there was, you know, just to see the response to the work that Jim and Monique and all of you guys have been doing has been really incredible. But L.A., it's an L.A. film, so I'm beyond excited to be able to share it here. It's a little bittersweet, I'm just excited. Yeah.
So one more time, what time is the screening on?
It's at 7 p.m.
At where?
On Friday. It's at the Cinemark, formerly known as the Rafe Theater, the Magic Johnson Theater on Crenshaw. 7 p.m. So I would suggest people get there early. I would also suggest getting tickets online because I'm not sure.
They're going.
Yeah.
Okay.
Going fast.
Okay. Well, I'm going to see both of you ladies on Friday evening. And thanks so much for making ladies' night at Uncle Bobba's Country. Uncle Bobba's? Where did I get that from? Uncle Bobby's Country Corner. We're going to take a short pause and we'll be right back. And again, thank you, Monique Brown.
Thank you,
Aurora Farlin, for coming in and representing the ladies' side of things.
My pleasure.
We'll be right back. Y'all know I'm just up here having too much fun. Welcome back to Ladies' Night at Uncle Bobby's Country Corner. To my right, family and co-host for the evening, Victor Leslie. And to my immediate life, man, I'm blessed to have known this sister long enough to appreciate her pulling away from the family business for a few minutes to be a part of this momentous occasion. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Vivian Bowers Cowan. I would be remiss not to acknowledge Greg Cowan. He's sitting over there. I went on their Facebook page trying to find a picture of her. so that I could feature her on the show, and I couldn't find one without him in it. And that tells me something very important about why I was inspired to do this show, because ladies and men, especially men and women who are able to come together as a unit, are able to do some extraordinary and oftentimes historic things. So first of all, welcome, Vivian. And let's talk a little bit about the business of the cleaning clothes for 60 years.
A dirty business. But we're trying to clean it up. How about that? Well, it's been actually 67 years this year.
Oh, my God. I'm off 7 years. 67 years.
It's really an honor to carry on the family legacy. I am third generation, and there are not many businesses, not to mention black businesses, that have been around that long. So it's just an honor, and it's a duty that I hope I can continue, and hopefully the fourth generation will come along behind me. When you said couples carrying on, my husband and I took over where my parents left off, and my parents took over where their parents left off. So it's been a tradition, a family tradition.
Now, how long have your father and mother been married? Because they're both very much still alive. How long have they been married?
67 years.
Wow.
Well, 66. It'll be 67 in November.
So,
isn't that awesome?
How long has old Greg over there been under your spell?
It'll be 20 years this year.
20 years. So you were outside of the business for a while, right?
Oh, yes.
And what made you come back into the fold?
That's a good question.
I'm pretty good at that.
Indeed, you are. Some people say lunacy, because when you work for yourself, you never stop working. But it was the passion for the business. My parents had both retired, and my brother, one of my brothers, took over, and he decided to go in a different direction. He's a writer, and he's doing very well at that, and he decided to go back and pursue his passion. And that left the cleaners unattended, but my father decided to go back, and after about 6 months, he said, I don't need to do this. I'm retired. I don't need to come back. He was settled. He invested in income property wisely, and he called out to his children and said, if anyone wants it, come get it now, because I'm locking the doors. And I thought about it, and I said, at that point, it was some 40-some-odd years. I said, this is a family legacy that could just be shuttered. And I didn't want to see that, nor did I want to see on Central Avenue yet another shuttered business. There was enough blight over there. And so I decided to go back.
Now, one of the things that I admire most about you having took the reins of the business, because you are the CEO of Bowers & Sons Cleaners. And what's your address for all the people that are in the greater Los Angeles area?
We are located at 2509 South Central in the historic Central Avenue.
Well, when I first met you guys, it's been almost 30 years ago when I was working
Isn't
with Muhammad Nasruddin and Recycling Black Dollars, is when I first met you guys. And that whole area was basically a black enclave.
Yes, it was.
Declining, but it was still us, primarily. Subsequent to that era, you now have a very diverse population around there. Can you speak to the changes over the last 30 years in that part of town?
Well, the changes have been very dynamic, Bobby, because, you know, when I grew up over there working in the cleaners, as, you know, when you have a family business, you're always working in the business. But it was a very vibrant black community. And so I was able to experience it go from a very vibrant community to a very depressed economically and physically. The beauty was just zapped out of it. And, of course, we went through the riots, the 65 riots. But then again, in the Rodney King riots, it left even more despair. In the wake of the 92 riots, and probably a little before. And also, let me not forget that there was the drugs and the gang violence that kind of took over in the absence of business. And the Latino population moved in. And they moved in with a vengeance. They're very densely populated over there, but they have revived the community. And since then, I would say that was circa 1990. Since then, we now see Koreans moving into the area, residential and business, and a few other immigrants moving into the area. And now, of course, as it is happening all over, we see Caucasians moving back.
You know, if you would, please, explain how you survived, because you had to adapt to that change. Could you speak to how you just kind of centered yourself and figured out what you needed to do to not only survive but to thrive in an ever-changing neighborhood?
And again, Bobby, you touched on something that's very sensitive. Many people said I wouldn't survive. In fact, they said you should just pick up the business and move, relocate into one of our areas, maybe in View Park, you know, Leimert. And I said, why? You know, and they asked me, why did I go? And I said, why not? And because you are there, you have to adjust. I guess you don't have to. You can choose to go out of business. But it's better to adjust. And you've been into our shop. One of the main things that I've done was to make sure that we had people that look like those in the community. Definitely would not have thrived if I did not hire bilingual employees, because the community is largely monolingual. So I could speak. I used my high school Spanish, and I did well for a while. They were very impressed. But the more the community changed and the more immigrants moved in, the more I found the necessity to have Latino employees that could communicate, that could relate, and that could allow our customers to feel comfortable. Now, at the same time, they had to be bilingual so that the now maybe 20% of African Americans that still, thank you very much, patronize us, they would be comfortable and well taken care of.
You know, I salute you both hands for being able to make that adjustment, because the money's green if you can provide the services. And that's a very tough thing to do, especially in Los Angeles, because people are very tribal here.
Yes.
And for them to embrace you means that there was a way that you had to go about reaching out to that new population and not just squeezing you out altogether. So that's an amazing accomplishment. And it's a blueprint. When I started this show, it was about models of possibility and best practices. And what this sister has been able to do along with her husband, and then Big Papa standing back there like,
yeah,
let's keep this thing rolling right down the middle of the road. It's an inspiring story and something that I want to be able to revisit from time to time, because in the last couple of minutes we have, I want you to talk about the passion that you've had for many years in terms of the revitalization of Central Avenue.
Bobby, I feel like it's a duty when you have a business to give back to the community. The community supports us. And so it is only fair and right and just, to whom much is given, much is required, that we in turn give back. And so I have been working with Central Avenue in particular and the businesses there to try and revitalize the community, to welcome people back, to encourage other businesses to come. And at this moment, I'm chairing the Business Improvement District on Central Avenue. And we are in our first year. We are babies. It's the first business improvement district to be created in South Central. So we're very proud of that. We go from Washington to the north to Vernon to the south. And there are roughly 300 businesses in that area. It is a property owner's business improvement district. So the property owners are the ones that pay the assessments that help to revitalize the area, to keep it clean, to keep it safe. And we're in the process now of marketing the businesses, trying to get them up to speed in terms of technology and social media, so that we can invite others to the to the Avenue and to do more than survive, as you mentioned, but to thrive on Central.
When you get a chance, those of you who are listening to the show, Google Central Avenue, and you will appreciate the magnitude of work that this sister and her husband and the Bowens and Cowens families have engaged in. It's monumental, and it's very, very important as we look for best practices to exist in ever-changing environments around not only Los Angeles but around the country. You will be back on my show, I hope. I ain't gonna hope.
If you'll have me.
Oh, you know that's happening. Because this sister is also an extended member of the AmeriCAN family. Anytime I've done anything since I kind of ventured out into my own orbit, I could call the Bowers people and they're there for me, you know. Absolutely. And I just want to say publicly to you, thank you so much. It means so much for you to come today and to have been somebody that's, you know, put wind behind my sails every time I ventured into something. And it means everything to me that you came today.
Well, thank you, Bobby, for having me, and you are well-deserving.
And we'll leave it at that.
I wish you much success.
We'll leave it at that because I've been took you serious. As we begin to wrap up, now, don't go nowhere, okay. Don't go nowhere. It's too late. We ain't got to have no breaks or nothing.
Okay.
I got one more little special ladies' night treat for you, I hope. Do we have someone on the phone? Oh, my goodness. I don't know what happened to baby girl. Oh, man, I really hate that. It's the sister that was on last week. She's 15 years old. Her name is Janae Kelly, and she's well-raised. She's got a strong mom and pop at home, and brother Anthony Canada, who's someone I'm doing some things with in the city of Memphis, reached out to me, and he told me about this young lady. And he said, man, she's gifted, man. And she was going to read a poem, and she's going to be mad at me. Cause I heard the beeping, but I didn't know what was happening, you know. And that just lets me save that for next week. The deal on that, on her poem, My People, My People. And when she read that to me over the phone last night, it just reminds me how important it is for us to reconstruct and sustain this village and this movement that everybody in this room is a reflection of. And I'm so happy to have Vic. I didn't get a chance to turn you really loose tonight.
That's okay. I'll be back.
Okay, she is on the phone, so it's indeed a blessing. Janae?
Yes, sir?
That's what I'm talking about right there. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. So we only got a couple of minutes, so, you know, we went over this last night. Okay, you know what you're supposed to do, so let's get it done. Ladies and gentlemen, Janae Kelly, My People, My People.
All right.
My people, my people. We have anger in our hearts, and it trembles through our bodies, showing in our fingertips. The scream of hatred sounding and clawing communities apart. The thoughts in our minds and lies on our lips. My people, my people, what shall we do and what shall we be when opportunity knocks on the door? Will we turn off the lights, closing the curtain and locking the lock? In the dark, will we hide, lighting a candle for the shadow of our history, the richness we would find, the joy and the pain, the loss and the gain? We might have always struggled, but we have always smiled. With the weight of our load and our feet aching, we've always walked the extra mile. So I'll ask again, what will we do? What will we be? If we wipe the mud from our eyes, what will we see? My people, my people, let us look upon the struggle of our fellow man. How can we stand together and think one is better than the other because of the jingle of one's pocket? Or the studies in one's noggin, so that when opportunity does come knocking, we have the support to open the door. Because the door is not easily opened, and opportunity does not easily enter. My people, we are all sinners. You sin, I sin, she, he, they all sin. People stuck in different lows, we've all been. All the bets we all make, but never win. However, judging looks keeps families away. sends friends away and causes the soul to decay. But we have the opportunity to change, just like the seasons. As another day approaches, what's a better reason to transform the world that we live in? Because there's another bearded man that gives away gifts to those who ask. Think about your neighbor, the begging man you pass on your way to work, and the woman who's attached to her flask. Ask for sight for the man who can't see his kids. Ask for independence for a slave who follows trends. Ask for courage for the head filled with doubt. Ask for memory for those who forgot what love is about. My people, let us remove the anger from our hearts. Let this shaking rage become a jiggling laugh. Because from now on, my people, we are all we have.
Ladies and gentlemen, 15 years old.
Awesome.
Maya Angelou would smile down. See, I got a couple of FIS alumni up in here, a school that produced some of the greatest literary icons in the history of the genre. And I saw Kathy smile over there because she can relate to the spoken word. And Mr. Victor here, he ain't bad with a pen itself, you know. So as I close today, I just want to hope that you got something from it. I made that promise to you when I started this show that every week was going to be about people who get it done. And in doing it, leave footprints. And as I close today, I want to thank you once again for letting me be myself here at Uncle Bobby's Country Corner. Next week, we going in deep. We'll have on air in studio the great Howard Hewitt, who performed at Jim Brown's 75th birthday party for me. And we're going to make it a night to remember. So get ready for next week. We'll be back. Thank you so much. We out of here, y'all.